public hearing to discuss an ordinance to amend Chapter 115, Article 4, Roman numeral Section 115-25 of the Code of Sussex County regarding cluster subdivisions. There will be a presentation given by Mr. Robertson and Ms. Cornwell to the County Council. Council will have an opportunity to question the presenters. Subsequent to that, it will be opened up to the public for any member of the public to address this issue. If you do address it, please come forward, give your name and address. And Mr. Robertson, are you going first?
If you could just hold up 1 second. Mr. Burton has something he wants to read.
Oh, sorry. My apologies.
That's okay. I just want to kind of just get this on the record. And I have been the impetus behind this ordinance really for the second time. The first time was in 2006. When it was introduced back then, it was perceived as a good solution, trading expedited review for superiorly designed smaller lot subdivisions. I heard comments from developers who were waiting 2.5 years to be heard at planning and zoning. Finally, something is being done to address the backlog of applications. Or better yet, at last, common sense is prevailing at the county. Not once did I hear a negative comment about the cluster ordinance itself. These are the same people that I suspect are opposing it today. When the market dropped and the issue of wait times became a moot point, the developers held on to the smaller lot size and exercised the optional clause for the superior design standards. And what I mean by exercise the optional clause, they exercise the option not to use the cluster superior design standards. I feel with certainty if the market would have remained strong, the superior design standards that were held in high regards by the developers would have been implemented and Sussex County would look very different today. It is for these reasons, both back in 2006 and today, that I feel this ordinance is good for Sussex County. I look forward to the public hearing and wish to thank all those who had written comments. Thanks for sending them.
Mr. Robertson.
Ms. Cornwell.
Ms. Cornwell.
That's okay. I just wanted to note that the Planning and Zoning Commission did hold a public hearing on April 11th of this year. At that time, a number of items were submitted to the record, and there were people that spoke for and against the application. At that meeting, they did recommend approval of the ordinance as proposed, and that carried 5-0. Since then, we've received 19 letters in support of the application of the proposed ordinance, and we received one letter in opposition to the proposed ordinance. Thank you.
My turn.
Your turn.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of council. When we get into this hearing, I thought, and staff agreed, that it would be helpful to have background with regard to what this ordinance says, how it was adopted, how it was amended, and how it was implemented. It actually goes back 16 years to the 2002 plan when the cluster idea was sort of first set out. And to go through this, I want to make sure that you all understand sort of how we got to where we are today so you can make a good decision on this ordinance when you have to act on it down the road. So you want to go to the first slide? And it's complicated, admittedly, particularly if you don't deal with it like Mr. Burton had when he was on the commission and Mr. Hudson did when he was on the commission. There's really two types of quote-unquote cluster subdivisions in Sussex County. One is the AR1 cluster, and the second is the environmentally sensitive developing area cluster, or now under our plan, the coastal area, sort of cluster, coastal area subdivision. It's really important to understand that the ordinance before you, which deals with the AR1 cluster subdivision, does not have any impact on development in the coastal area of the Sussex County Comprehensive Land Use Plan, and that's shown on the future land use map.
Can we question as we go along? Or
sure, Mr. Riley.
I mean, I just want to be clear in my head. You're saying that the ordinance would not apply to the coastal zone.
The coastal area, the coastal zone is technically something different, but the coastal area that's shown on our future land use map.
The coastal zone would be exempted from this, so people could continue to build developments without adopting these standards. in that zone.
The standards don't apply in that area, that's correct.
In that land use designation.
Yeah.
Only the rest of the county this applies.
Yeah, it comes down to, and I'll get to the map in just a second, and we'll see what we're talking about. The coastal area subdivisions are governed by 115.
194.
194. The AR1 subdivisions are governed by 115, 25 of the zoning code. So they're two different sets of requirements.
A little bit of discrimination right there.
Is there a reason for that? Why doesn't it apply to the coastal zone?
There, so it goes back to the original, the 2002 plan. And let me back up. First of all, Title IX talks about in your plan, you're supposed to acquire or set out different areas that have different types of development, low density growth areas, that sort of thing. I mean, that's spelled out in Title IX. It's been in our 02 plan, our 08 plan, and it's now in our current plan. There were two different sets of standards. We say that the AR1 cluster has, you know, we're talking about yield plan and superiority. That's sort of one silo, I guess, in terms of development. The environmentally sensitive developing area, now coastal area, that there's environmental issues in there. You have to do an environmental assessment. You have to do different things as part of any development in that area. So there's a different set of standards because of, at the time it was developed in 2002, its proximity to the coast and the inland bays and that sort of thing. So there's two different reasons for why they were implemented, I don't know, 16 years ago or so. I don't know if that answers the question, but.
Continuing.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same as, like, you know, there's low density areas and there's certain requirements for that. You know, certain densities you can do in a low density area. I mean, we're not talking about that today, but the plan sort of sets out different areas within the county, like it's required to do by the Quality of Life Act in Title IX.
I just find it interesting. I mean, honestly, most of the letters I've gotten, and frankly, a lot of the people here today, I think, live in the coastal zone that support this, but yet it doesn't even impact where they are.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to get to a map in a second just to talk about that. So,
a bit of discrimination, aren't it?
No, it's not discrimination, Mr. Wilson.
It's like me.
It's land use and zoning. So, within the coastal area, as I said, there is clustering of single-family detached lots to a minimum size of 7,500 square feet. That's permitted in the residential zoning districts where there's central sewer and water. So you still get the 2 units an acre density. You just get the smaller lot size. You don't have to do any superiority or anything like that. You still have to do the environmental assessment stuff. If there's on-site septics, you can go down to clustering with half-acre lots. And as the bottom bullet states, again, there's no requirement that the lot sizes or the design of the subdivision be superior to a subdivision with the standard 3/4 acre lots as there is in the AR1 cluster. So the next slide, this is the future land use map that's in our current plan. And it shows the areas I'm talking about. If you look at that, everything in yellow is the coastal area. So if you're in that yellow area, the ordinance that we're talking about in the AR1 cluster subdivision requirements don't apply. So if you're in that coastal area, you get the 7,500 square foot lots, 2 units an acre. You have to do the environmental assessment requirements and things that are in 115, 194. So moving to the AR1 cluster subdivisions, which is why we're here today, because there's some superiority element, there is some discretion that's granted to planning and zoning on these. The lot sizes, if you have a septic system, the lots can be a half acre, 21,780 square feet. If you are in the low density area, there's a 25% reduction on that by code currently. And this is all what's in our code currently. Lots with central sewer, the density is determined by dividing the acreage by 20,000 square feet. And again, the lot sizes can be reduced to 7,500 square feet. So currently, the Planning and Zoning Commission under 115.25F is charged with making these determinations. One, whether the cluster development provides for a total environment and design which is superior to a standard subdivision. Two, whether the cluster development will preserve the natural environment and any historic and archaeological features. Three, whether the items in 99.9C of the subdivision code have been addressed, and whether clustering will have an adverse impact on any of the 99.9C items. But the issue is that, going back to that first item about whether a total environment design which is superior to a standard subdivision exists, that's not defined anywhere in our code. And maybe IG can recall this from when he was on P&Z. It's troubling because it grants discretion. There's no rules you have to follow or standards that you have to follow. Or if you're an engineer, all right, I know if I do this, it's going to be superior to a standard subdivision. And that was sort of an issue with the AR1 going forward, that there weren't any standards or guidelines or anything, you know, continuity or consistency in terms of what was in the code at that point. So, again, to the background, it does relate back to the 2002 comprehensive plan, where the plan said clustering to 7,500 square foot lots was promoted in the growth areas, and that was in the 02 plan. According to the plan, the type of design was intended to, among other things, preserve open space, tree cover, scenery, natural drainage ways, and facilities attractive and economical site design, and better overall use of land. And as I said, the original ordinance required a showing of superior design, but it was never defined. So what we got out of that plan, actually, was Ordinance 1709, which was adopted in 2004. And I thought it would be helpful, because this is the origins of the whole thing we're talking about, to look at the whereas clauses of that ordinance. And it talked about one of the goals of the plan, the 02 plan, being encouraging the use of design concepts which accommodate new and innovative lot configuration, result in efficient vehicular circulation and attractive parking, and promote community interaction through a pedestrian-friendly development pattern. And the comprehensive plan proposed allowing cluster development to accomplish the goals. Also in that ordinance, it actually defined what cluster development was, and I thought it would be helpful to read that sentence just so you all know what the actual definition was in 2002. It's a development concept which encourages and permits variations in residential developments by allowing deviation in lot size, type of dwelling, lot coverage, and open space from that which is normally required as further described in the applicable residential districts. So that was the purpose behind it, and that was the definition of it. So the 2008 plan, after there had been some implementation of Ordinance 1709, recognized that improvements were necessary to the AR1 cluster process. What was happening there was an increased number of lots that were occurring in cluster subdivisions, and that became a concern of the county, which is reflected in the 2008 plan, which was adopted by, you know, county council and signed off by the governor. And one of the recommendations that was in that plan, to quote, was to make sure cluster development is not misused to generate a dramatic increase in the number of homes allowed on a tract. A yield plan should be required that accurately shows the number of homes that would actually be possible on the same tract under conventional development regulations. So you can see the county had probably a couple or three or four years of implementation of Ordinance 1709, saw how developments were coming through. That goal was set out in the 08 plan, which led to an ordinance to address that. The OA plan also recommended specific superiority requirements, which included a new four-step process. And I mentioned this when the ordinance was introduced. It was the order in which you would design a subdivision. It set that out in the code, first in the comprehensive plan, later in the code. The first thing would be identify lands that should be preserved, and it actually talks about wetlands, creeks, valleys, sloped areas, woodlands, tree lines, scenic views, historic buildings, and prime farmland, the remaining areas being available for development. When we use the word preserved there, that doesn't mean that you can't build on that. It's just sort of ranking what's best to preserve and what's best to build on a property. It's not that you can't build on woodlands or within tree lines, but all things being equal, if you have open area that's been tilled versus some area that's got some unique characteristics, whether it's trees or whatever, and you get the same number of lots no matter what, put the lots where they're going to have the least impact on trees or scenic views or adjacent farmland, et cetera. So that was step one.
like to ask you a question.
Sure.
How do you recognize prime farmland? How do you recognize that? Is that somebody's opinion?
So how that would work, Mr. Wilson, would be, because as it got adopted by the code, the applicant and their engineer would come in and say, this is how I designed the project. We looked at the piece of land, what was on it, and what was around it. We saw that there was prime farmland next to the northeast side of it. So we wanted to place the lots away from that prime farmland.
Who's talking about we?
I'm talking about the developer, landowner, and their engineers, okay. their application team.
Okay, landowner can make his own decision.
No, absolutely. They're the ones that are making that decision.
He's going to make a decision on prime farmland.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's true for all those other characteristics as well. It's the landowner designer, it's not the county that's determining or approving.
No, what it does is it puts the burden on the landowner, developer, the engineer to say, this is how we came up with this design. So it's not the county saying, you got to do this here and this there, but it puts the burden on the applicant to show this is how we designed it.
And so they do that, and what, the county can like it or not like it and approve it or not approve it? Or
it's going to be, I don't know that it would be approval or disapproval. It would be maybe approval with certain conditions. It's going to depend on a case-by-case basis.
It depends whose opinion involved, right?
Well, that's part of it, and that's why this ordinance to make these steps mandatory sort of, I don't want to say it reduced that concern or eliminated that concern, but it reduced that concern. Because before, it was really opinion-based, but when the steps I'll get to, if they're mandatory, then it becomes real specific or a lot more specific on how you need to design.
Provides predictability.
Yeah.
If I'm landowner of this cluster, and later on we're come in and build within that piece of land that's not been developed, what's going to stop me from doing that?
Well, you have to comply with the code requirements. I mean, that's what would you'd have to design in accordance.
That'd be my opinion. At that chance, I could still say this is my opinion, but I ought to be able to develop this.
Well, within code, yes.
Yeah. Well, in other words, you're going to put this in code here. It says, what is my prime property there?
Well, actually, it's already in code.
It looked like me already got. If we pass this, it looks like it's going to be our decision. What's going to be prime property or not?
Ultimately, land use falls with planning and zoning and county council. But this gives greater predictability. And I admit, whether you like it or not, but in terms of what we're going to hear this morning or this afternoon, but at least in terms of what we have now versus going forward, there's at least a checklist. There's better predictability. You have a better understanding of what the commission's going to look at. And it gives the commission sort of less discretion, I guess, in the sense that they have a checklist to follow, too. They can't just, condition things or approve things on a whim so much.
So there goes property rights.
I don't really have any opinion on that.
It looks like my opinion.
So, Mr. Riley, did you?
It just sounds like we're trying to create cookie cutter developments. I mean, everyone's going to look just like the next.
Perhaps. Having lived through this, I think we're in a little bit of a cookie cutter scenario now. We may end up with it if this gets approved, but I wouldn't say that this is going to create cookie cutter developments when we don't have them currently.
You say you lived through this. Give me a prime example where a cluster is.
We see cluster subdivisions twice a Thursday, Mr. Wilson, every Thursday night, it seems like.
I see a lot of houses built to get all together, but not necessarily in a cluster.
Have any of them ever adopted these standards voluntarily?
We're going to get to one. There's one that did, and sort of proves the point, because it's optional. So getting back to these, so the first thing is you identify those lands, and then generally you locate the home sites. Now, that's not individual lots. That's just where we're going to put homes in general. Then next, you locate the roads and trails. And then the fourth thing is you actually draw in the lot lines.
You read here, somewhere along, you said half acre, right? Unless you have central source.
Yeah, that's right. That's
well, right. Natural resources says it's got to be a 3/4 acre.
Yeah, you can go.
So the zoning ordinance requires in the AR1 zoning district requires 3/4 acre. However, as part of a cluster subdivision, you can go down to a half acre with approval from DENRAC.
Well, you know, I get approved. If you do, you're pretty good. But they don't. I've done talk to them about that. It says 3/4 acre lots, unless you got a central sewer. If You don't have central.
Yeah, no, central sewer gets you down to 7,500 in the cluster.
So that means this cluster, you got to have at least a central sewer.
Most of the ones we see are central sewer. So as I mentioned in the 2008 plan, it wanted an ordinance to update or revise how the cluster process had been working, which resulted in ordinance number 2024. And that was introduced to establish the yield plan that the 08 comp plan required, the four-step process that I just mentioned, and also set the specific design criteria that had to be satisfied in order to achieve a superior design for approval of an AR1 cluster. The Planning and Zoning Commission recommended approval of ordinance number 2024, but at the time it reached council, council did not want to make the new requirements mandatory for everyone.
Was there a reason given for why they didn't want to?
So the reason, at the time, it was Mr. Phillips, Councilman Phillips at the time, his reason was that, I think Mr. Burton alluded to this, when you go back to the minutes, there was a two and a half year backlog on subdivisions. So if you applied, you know, today, May 2019, you wouldn't get your hearing until May of 2021 or later, just because of the sheer volume of applications at that time. Mr. Phillips, when you read the minutes anyway, he wanted A, to get away from that backlog if possible, so incentivize people to use it and you kind of bump to the front of the line, and B, get a chance to see how it worked. So the short answer to that story is, soon after the ordinance was adopted, the recession hit, which eliminated that 2.5 year backlog. We went from 2.5 years to 6 months pretty quickly. So that eliminated the need for the incentive. And as near as we can recall, looking at the records, nobody ever did the incentivized option, except for one, which we'll get to in a moment. So as a result of that, as I just described with Mr. Phillips' motion, which was adopted by council, I don't think it was a unanimous motion, I don't recall a unanimous adoption, but there were two paths. One was the status quo. You could just proceed with the AR1 cluster just like you always had, with no superior design requirements, no yield plan, no four-step process, or any of that sort of thing. Or the second one was what the new ordinance was intended to do was the specific superior design requirements, the yield plan, the four-step process, and again, it was incentivized. You came to the front of the line if you chose that path. So choice path number one, it kept the original fairly vague cluster design standard, which again, not much guidance, but all the code says is there must be a total design that is superior in the reasonable judgment of the Planning and Zoning Commission to a standard subdivision. The only other significant requirements under that first choice or path, there must be a 30-foot forested buffer along lots abutting agricultural areas. Dwellings located within 50 feet of an existing residential development must provide an adequate transition in density along with the 30-foot buffer. No lots shall contain any wetlands. The subdivision must preserve the natural environment and any historic archaeological resources, and all the items in 99C of the code must be addressed. So choice or path number two, which was adopted in our code, it's physically in our code right now, it's the second option. In addition to those items, added a lot more of the specific criteria. Go to the next one. So under the second option, the four-step process outlined that I mentioned before needs to be followed, where the developer has to show how they design their subdivision. The homes must be clustered in the environmentally suitable portions of the tract, specifically those portions of the tract that are the least encumbered by sensitive environmental features, including wetlands, mature woodlands, waterways, and other water bodies. And I would put up here, I just wanted to make the point, you know, these aren't new requirements. It's not something that staff came up with. You'll see in each one of these, there's citations to the zoning code. I make that point to say that we're not adding anything new. This is all information that's currently in our code. It's just that second path. So the applicant must submit a yield plan that accurately depicts the maximum number of dwelling units possible under a standard or non-cluster subdivision. The yield plan, it must be to scale, must show lots, streets, and storm drainage facilities, although it's not to the level of engineering required for a formal preliminary or final plan. So it's basically a sketch or concept plan of what you could lay out on that property. It does need to depict all wetlands, wooded areas, or other water bodies. And that's what you would determine the number of lots you get within the AR1 cluster if you use option two. You do that yield plan, you know, and if I was representing an applicant, I would cram as many lots as I can on that yield plan, knowing that I'm not designing it to look good. I'm not designing it to sell lots or homes. I'm designing it to maximize my number of lots I can get with the cluster development, because that yield plan says, all right, that number is the number of lots I get in my cluster subdivision. So the next requirement is all open space must satisfy the definition of open space in section 115-4, and there's items that are spelled out. That's not affected by this. That's in code right now. The open space must be designed to be beneficial to the residents or users of the open space. It shall not be constituted of fragmented lands with little open space value. Accordingly, 30% of all open space shall be located on one contiguous tract of land, except that such open space may be separated by water bodies and a maximum of one street. That was a significant issue at planning and zoning in 2006, 2007, and 2008. Cluster developments were coming in, as they still are, under the first option, with open space where there's slivers between lots. So you'll have a road, homes, and then there'll maybe like a little oval of open space between it. There's not necessarily a significant large quantities or areas of open space in the development, and that's what P&Z wanted to address back in 08. They wanted to give sort of a greater description of how they wanted that open space to look, you know, that it would be in larger contiguous tracts of land, not split up and spread out throughout an entire subdivision.
You said it's already in the code?
This is already in the code, yes.
So why are we voting?
Because right now it's optional. So basically what you're voting on is whether to keep this as optional or make it mandatory for everybody.
Well, it sounds like you took away being volunteered right away from us, right?
And that's what you all would do. That's what the ordinance that you're acting on does. It basically eliminates these choices and says everybody has to follow these requirements.
Well, to understand that.
Yeah, no, that's a good question, because that simplifies it really, yeah, to what we're talking about.
That is only if you want to do a cluster.
Right, that's right.
Mm-hmm. If we volunteer
to do a cluster,
but not mandatory.
Yeah, because you could always still do a standard subdivision.
Correct.
Right.
You said we always could.
You can always do a standard 3/4 acre, 20,000 square foot.
If we pass this code today, we can still build what we want to build.
Yeah, we can still do the 3/4 acre. No, it's not mandatory to follow the cluster route. So yeah. So the other criteria, if one of the following physical conditions exists adjacent to the proposed cluster development tract, at least 30% of all required open space must be adjacent to, you know, parks, land preserved by easement, or land preserved as open space by a municipal, county, state, or federal ownership. The idea was, if you're going to put your open space in a development and you've got some sort of open space next to it, it made sense to make one great big area of open space in this development adjacent to whatever was next to it. Same thing with existing wetlands, waterways, wildlife corridors, or other ecology sensitive land, existing farmland or woodlands. The idea behind that is, if you've got, you know, a farm that's producing and you've got this open space requirement, it makes sense to put the open space near the farm that's in production rather than on the opposite side, maybe next to other houses. And that's how you would design sort of where the open space would go. It also talks about open space in a cluster development shall include a pedestrian trail system accessible to residents. It shall also connect with any adjacent trail systems, neighborhoods, commercial areas, or public open space. It's sort of pedestrian interconnectivity throughout the development with whatever's next to it. The next one is, there must be a 25-foot setback from all types of wetlands where no building or paving can occur. The 50-foot setback that's in code also applies. I want to point out, just because sort of concurrently with this, we're having wetlands workshops. That addresses probably 15 to 20 different areas of the code. We know that as a result of that, there's going to be amendments throughout the whole zoning and partly the subdivision code. We knew that whether this ordinance got introduced or not, that 25-foot setback requirement is going to be looked at. It's still going to be looked at no matter what you all do on this ordinance. I just wanted to put that out there. It's not really affected by that wetlands group. So the next sort of element of superior design is that the removal of healthy, mature trees shall be limited. Scenic views that can be seen from within the track shall be preserved to the greatest extent possible, and sidewalks must be included on at least one side of all streets. So those items are all in the code right now. You know, it's set out. It was back in 08, it was intended to be mandatory. Those items were made to be a choice. As I mentioned, we've had one that applied using that path or choice, but it really sort of illustrates how this would work, like I always like to say, in real life. Because we have a real life example where an applicant and their engineers came forward using those options. So what you have actually in front of you is it's a perimeter survey of a property, and on it, I'll just generally say that on the left-hand side, for the most part, that's all treed. It's not an aerial photograph, but more or less, that's trees, everything to the left of that line. So you start with that under the code, as they did. Then the next thing you do is the yield plan. So that's the yield plan that we talked about, and which is required by the second choice. And as I mentioned, you know, that's not designed to look pretty. It's not designed in detail with stormwater management. It's not designed with, you know, significant usable open space, because it's not required to. The whole purpose of the yield plan is to maximize the number of lots that you can fit on that property, so that determines how many lots you can cluster on the subdivision. So you can see on the yield plan, they have, rightfully so, put lots throughout the whole tract. Trees everywhere, you know, there's lots there, because that gets you the number that you can use for the actual preliminary site plan itself through the cluster subdivision design.
So the average size of these lots would be
20,000
square feet. So these are your standard by right 2 to the acre
with design. Central sewer.
Correct.
And the idea is the cluster would now, we'd, you know, crunch that down into a much smaller area, much smaller lots.
Correct.
That's correct. So which actually leads to the next slide. So they've got their number from that yield plan.
Got it.
But with 7,500 square foot lots, same number of lots, but it's clustered towards the front of the property. And if you remember that four-step process, one of the first things you do is look at, all right, well, what areas are unique or are more appropriate for the homes to be located or less appropriate for the homes to be located, perhaps. They came in and recognizing that the left side of that property was all trees, that's all preserved, same number of lots, but the trees stayed. The flip side of it is where the lots are, that was all at one point tilled land, it was all open, there wasn't anything there. Yeah, so this actually got approved, it got recorded, it got final site plan approval, and they're moving along. After that occurred, they realized that they could go back using path one, and they don't have to do the yield plan at all. We can, you know, get 2 units an acre, 7,500 square foot lots, and this was the design that came in. It's the same layout, same orientation, but without the yield plan or the four-step process, there's more lots, and the lots are in the treed areas. So that's really the difference. That sort of spells out the current cluster ordinance that most everybody's using versus the yield plan and the superiority requirements.
Does this add a lot of expense to the developer?
Which part?
Because there's more engineering, there's more design, there's more steps in the process.
There's really just, you know, and there's plenty of engineers that are here that could to talk about that. At the time it went through in 08, there was a concern about the expense, and that's why in that yield plan section, it talks about that you don't have to design it to final design criteria. As I said, it's a sketch plan. It becomes sort of a geometrical exercise there, fitting on the lots. You're not designing it to preliminary site plan standards and all that that's set out in the code, and then designing it again for the cluster layout. You're doing it maybe, you know, well, I'm not an engineer, I don't want to say how much, but it's a lower burden on that yield plan, much lower.
Mr. Robertson, do you have the numbers of the yield plan versus the standard?
The yield plan version was 100 lots. The, write that one. Then the next one's 136.
And the original 2 to the acre was in the first
the first one, the yield plan that was first?
Is 100 lots.
100 lots. So that's 100. They ended up with 136 total.
And he totally kept on expanding it, right? From cluster. From cluster, he went right on up to more expanding area.
Well, when they went from the yield plan design path to the next one, yeah, it expanded it by 36 lots.
That's a cluster, for example, we're supposed to look at, right?
Yeah, well, so the first, if you want to back it up.
Yeah.
So he didn't live up to it, evidently.
No, it's totally by code. Everything here is by code.
I'm not saying he's out of code, but I'm just saying he didn't live up to the cluster.
Well, he did, and that's what we're saying. That's why right now it's optional. So they lived up to the cluster on this one, the second path with all the standards and the yield plan. Because they did the yield plan, found out they could get 100 lots, and then designed a cluster subdivision with 100 lots that kept the open space where the trees were, which was next to other trees, and actually next to another development who came in and said they wanted open space next to theirs.
Does the cluster have to be jammed in one spot? Can it be moved around in the corner of the field? And get that much in? How about if you've got a pivot in, makes a big circle, and you want to put your cluster on the other side, on the corners?
It's interesting you say that, because Mr. Gordy, if I recall, who was on commission at that time, he actually talked about you could use clustering through some sort of conservation easement where the lots would be, let's put it this way, say that wasn't trees on that left-hand side.
Yeah.
You'd cluster all the lots on the right-hand side, and if that was tillable land on the left-hand side,
yeah,
you could have a farmer still till that. It would still be open space, but you know, it would be a bigger, more usable piece of open space.
Well, I'm looking to more square piece there. That's your big cutout. You can't do much pivot.
Yeah.
Can't do much work on that.
Yeah, no, that's true. I'd be,
Got to have half a dozen of them.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's true.
But this subdivision went through.
Yes.
So a developer took this thing all the way to design and said, I'm ready to go. I can make this work financially.
Yeah, so it got final site plan approval.
It was recorded.
And recorded at that version right there. So yeah, it was done.
So it made sense and it worked. And then all of a sudden there was a change. Somebody said, well, wait a minute, you don't have to do that. You can get an additional lot.
That's correct.
So that's just a financial change. The design change, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
But it was ready to go at this number.
At that smaller number, it was ready to go.
Yeah, these lots exist per the county records.
It's been recorded downstairs. And recorded these. Yeah.
These lots exist.
Okay.
And that's 136?
No, this is 100.
That's 100.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last slide was 136.
This is 136. And the areas circled in blue are the additional 136 lots.
And that
approximately.
And that piece of land belonged to the same farmer, right?
Well, when they, I don't want to say, at some point it belonged to a farmer. I don't know at the time
Same owner.
Yeah, the same owner, right, when it came through, yeah.
If these are best practices, so to speak, why aren't they voluntarily adopted? Why does the government need to impose them as mandatory?
Good question.
That's more of a policy question, but I'll take it back to the original policy in 2002, just for historical sake, and it actually shows up in the 2008 plan like I talked about. In 2002, when the cluster ordinance was talked about in the plan and then adopted in 2004, and that's one of the reasons I read the whereas provisions and the definition of the ordinance back in 2004. It wasn't designed to maximize density. I mean, that whether that happened or not, that wasn't the purpose of it. It was to allow better clustering of lots to preserve more open space, you know. Because at that point, keep in mind, we were seeing at the county, without any cluster option at all, you're seeing standard 3/4 acre lots on septics for subdivisions, or it wouldn't have been to the extent of that yield plan, but 20,000 acre lots, there's no design standards. It's covering every square inch of a piece of property. And in 2002, the council at that time, realized I think, you know, we can have better design of subdivisions, and so they wanted better design. But then between 2002 and 2008, they realized that, well, we're getting a different design, but we're getting, well, 36 more lots, which was never what the intention of this was. And that's why that statement was in the 08 plan saying, look, we need to look at this because it shouldn't be used to maximize density. It should be used to come up with better subdivisions. That was a long answer to your short question, but that's sort of the history of where we are.
Long answer, yeah.
I'm a lawyer. I'm paid by the word. No, I'm kidding.
So what happens in turn when you got chick houses built there, then you got all the odor, then you got complaints and all those built in that area?
Well, see, and that goes back to what that...
like the dust to all the other parts.
Yeah, that was what that four-step process was looking to do, Mr. Wilson, would be, okay, if you looked at a piece of property and you had chicken houses on the northeast corner of it, and you know you've got to have 30% open space, you know, it wouldn't make sense to put your open space on the southwest corner. You're going to put it up on the northeast corner, you know, so that you've got open space around where the farming operations are.
Right.
Rather than, you know, having a bunch of slivers throughout the thing and everybody's next to the farming operations.
Is the idea of this to improve aesthetics or to materially improve the environment, or maybe both?
Maybe a little bit of both. I will say that, again, going back to the original ordinance, the environment was not, and I don't mean to discount the environment, but that was not the driving force behind it. It was more, we're getting subdivisions that are covering, you know, every part of a piece of property with very little open space. Because at the same time, you know, the 2002 plan talked about we need better definitions of open space and that sort of thing. It was to try to get people, enable them to have the same number of lots they could in 2001, you know, because it becomes geometry. How many 20,000 square foot lots can you put on a piece of property? You get the same number of lots, but you get a better design, you get more open space, you can shrink the roadway distance that you got to put down, you can shrink all your utilities and all that sort of thing. It was supposed to be a design that sort of worked for everybody's benefit but resulted in more open space in the development.
I just want to thank my fellow council members for their patience with me, because I wasn't here for the original debates, and I'm trying to get up to speed on
it. Well, that's why I wanted to make sure you all understood sort of 2002 through now.
Flip back to the yield plan. That one. That's what we were seeing.
Yeah.
Right? So we were seeing subdivisions with sewer that they were just maximizing that deal. So every tree got cut, every piece of property was developed. And by not changing the math, we got that one. So we didn't change the math at all.
Right. Basically, if you flip back to that last one, there would be some design differences, probably more stormwater management, things of that nature, but that was a standard, what we call by right subdivision, say in 2001. Before
which they can still do, right?
Correct.
They can still do, yeah.
Yes.
We saw that every Thursday night.
Yeah.
I guess one concern I have is if we make the cluster process too restrictive, too onerous, too expensive, does it create an incentive for people to not use the cluster option and simply default to that?
Exactly right. It's always their option.
Yeah.
Taking that option away.
What I would say on that would be that certainly that's an option to do, but there's an offset on that too, is that if you're putting that much roadway down, I mean, that's an asphalt cost. If you're putting that much sewer pipe down, that's a significant cost, and maybe in another pump station or two, depending on how the land's laid out. Sidewalks, that's a significant cost. Stormwater management throughout that whole site, versus if you go to that one, it's I don't want to say it's halved, but it's significantly less in linear feet of what you got to put in infrastructure. So that would be the option.
Which option would yield more affordable housing?
I'm speculating, I would say. But I would say this one only because, you know, if there's an HOA, there's less to maintain on that.
I
It's going to depend.
I appreciate your patience.
No, that's fine.
I know I'm asking a lot of questions, but.
And Mr. Riley, there's a lot of variables in that. I mean, because it depends on what kind of amenities you put in, you know, and all sorts of things.
The housing types.
I go back to your opinion again.
My opinion.
That goes back to Mr. Mitch's opinion. Anything else?
Flip the last one. Actually, you know, just flip back to that one. So again, just sort of, you can see where there's trees. This sort of just shows you where the trees were. And originally on the yield plan cluster, it preserved not only the trees on the property, but the trees that were next to other trees, you know, because that was sort of what we talked about, looking at what's around that. So
why did it stop? Because it got wetlands?
I have no idea. There is, I think there's wetlands or a stream on that sort of left boundary up there.
Back here somewhere?
But they also maxed out on, I think, on the density they could get.
Yes, they did.
Yeah, so that's maxed out at 2 units an acre, so they couldn't have put any more lots in.
Well, you got central sewer, it doesn't matter, right?
We can't, yeah, but you can't go more than two with central sewer.
Can't go more than two?
Yeah, AR1.
Why can't we put three?
Because AR1 says only two.
If you're on central sewer, why not?
Because AR1, the zoning code says only two.
Why not change it?
That's a you call, not a me call.
If we're trying to make it more dense, why not change it? Why not put three to an acre?
That's a separate ordinance amendment, Mr. Wilson, so, but yeah. I mean, you'd have to change the zoning code on that. So.
Something to think about, isn't it?
Yeah, no, that's something you'd certainly think about. So, back to Mr. Wilson's point, he sort of earlier on talked about this. What it does is it doesn't add any new criteria that aren't stated in the code now. It just makes all those criteria apply to everybody. It eliminates those two paths, makes one path that everybody has to follow. Everybody's following the same set of rules. And the other item is that if you do any sort of cluster subdivision, you're expedited. That was one of the incentives that was added when the ordinance was introduced. So,
could we reasonably expect standards for superior design to evolve and improve over time? And if they do, would this lock us in at status quo and see us falling behind what new standards are?
No, because you could change those at any time. And that was actually sort of part of a discussion we had way back when this started, you know, even back in the comp plan, when the comp plan talked about updating the AR1 cluster, is there may be some evolution, but we've got these standards now. Let's not really go and start changing what we have in the code first. Let's see how they work initially, you know, and apply them to subdivision we have going forward. And, you know, we don't know that it's broken yet. Let's figure that out before we fix it. So that's a 45-minute explanation of clustering came to be. You know, it's not something out of the blue, as I mentioned. It goes back, and it got a lot of thought back in 2002 in the comprehensive plan. It got a lot of thought in 2008 in the comprehensive plan. There was ordinances along the way, and it's even referenced in our current 2018 or 19 plan, whichever one we're calling it. So.
Are there any other questions from council? Any questions? If not, is there any member of the public that would like to come forward and speak on this issue? I saw this hand go up first. Would you come on up, please?
Sure.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I remember we need your we need your name and address, and there is a sheet up there on the podium. If you would sign your clipboard and sign, please.
Right now?
Yes, please.